woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Hello, everybody. It's Facts and Giants. I'm Tom Howell. This is Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 23. This is like deja vu all over again, just like yesterday. Every day, 20 points in the S&P, over 100 in NASDAQ. The only difference now is when we're pouring money into the system, we've stopped giving it to regular people. It's just going in the market, would be my guess here. What do you think of that, Matt or Kevin?
I think you covered it. I'll see you on Friday.
Yeah, it's so we have Cubbies are winning. Sox, are we going to have a city series with nobody in the stands?
Man, wouldn't that be interesting?
Wouldn't that be awful? Just terrible irony.
Yeah, just I can't. There was one once, wasn't there? Back in, was there, I thought it was like 1906 or 02 or something, where am I wrong there?
I don't know, that was when, right after you were born, I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, yeah, the, you know who we haven't, Maddie, we have a long list of people we've had on the show, way, way early on. Remember we had the guy who wrote the book, The Original Curse?
I do.
I wonder if that dude's still around.
Yeah, we'll have to look him up. By the way, the Cubs went to the World Series 3 years in a row, 1906, 1907, 1908. They won it in 07 and 08. In 06, they lost to the White Sox, 4-2.
Really?
Wow.
1906.
And then it was a while after that.
And then it was a while after that. The Sox didn't win again until, I think they... Shortly after that, maybe 10 years after that, and then they didn't win, obviously, until 2005. The Cubs, after 08, obviously didn't win until 2016.
Well, they went to the pennant in 59. The Sox. They went to the World
Series.
Yeah,
lost to the Dodgers there.
Dodgers had a good team. The Sox had a good team. They had, remember, they found Big Clue right down the stretch. And
Big Clue, that's who?
And then he, there was a guy, I don't know how he... Talk about getting the uniform change, Matty. He got the change from the league where he could tear basically the sleeves out because his shoulders were so big he couldn't fit in the shirt. So he looked like he had like a workout shirt with his uniform. It was pretty interesting.
Basically, the man's arms looked like tree trunks.
Yes, and
I never had that problem.
Oh, come on! Was he your old girlfriend?
No, I once was wearing a sleeveless shirt to play basketball, and I had somebody say, look, if you're going to wear a muscle shirt, you really ought to have muscles.
That is the thing. some guys have it, and some guys don't, as they say, or if you got it, flaunt it or something. But anyway, the market was interesting because we can't continue to get this... driving. I think people are just starting to figure out, Kevin. Well, when the market does that, and it's pretty much Fed money, I mean, it's just pouring in my opinion, it gets narrower and narrower, and people just keep saying, the Tesla thing, Tesla was actually down yesterday for the first time in a while. But it's, I mean, it's Apple. And Apple's, I've got these guys that does Salesforce yesterday, the guys that beat on the, was it the, yeah.
Sure, they made it into the S&P 500.
Yeah, no. Who's the guys at Zoom? They're up to 11 times sales now. Anybody didn't think that's a danger zone? Was the song "Highway to the Danger Zone" and
Top Gun.
Top Gun. I mean, that's where Cisco and all those companies made it in 2000. There were 6, 7, 10 times sales, not earnings. 20 times, I mean, sales. I mean, when you start getting up there, I mean, I think maybe the market is starting to figure out, possibly, with the money pouring on top, it's got to go someplace. But, you know, it's interesting watching the creatures on CNBC talking about how bullish it all is because these companies are doing, like, all the right thing. Kevin, is it possible for somebody to say, hey, you know what? The reason why Target, Walmart, Amazon are doing so good is they shut everybody else down? Is anybody putting two and two together? Why, Lord?
It may be. The question with that, Tom, is will everybody else be able to come back?
No.
Or is this
no.
a permanent shift? And if it's a permanent shift, then I guess, to some extent, that investment money would be, I hate to use the word safe, but I don't have a better one at the top of my head, it would be parked in the right place.
Well, I think it probably is on a relative scale, you know, in terms of which stocks you'd like to be in. But it does come to a point where, no, I think the other places, I don't see how they come back, Kevin, because the bills, they're not going to get any sort of relief on anything. I mean, Lord & Taylor, they're going to be sued basically out the behind, and all the leases are paling out. And I don't see Macy's getting a tax break on State Street, do you?
Nope.
I mean, so I mean, I don't know how, I don't, so it's not like...
Well, I don't know. It depends.
On what?
It think depends gonna... on if, on in Chicago, it depends on if, you know, if Lori's paying attention from Maine or not.
From Maine.
Yeah, you know, you don't know she took a vacation to Maine?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she took a vacation to Maine. She, you know, put everybody in emergency services on 12-hour shifts and then booked out of town. And went to Maine. She was asked about it in a press conference a few days ago and basically said, well, I couldn't have done anything here. And as I look at that, you know, I just sort of think of a situation because I always managed teams of people who were on call 7x24 in the IT world. And you know what? When one of the people got called in, and or several of them, and they had to either come in overnight or they had to stay late until a problem was fixed, you know what? I might not have been able to help them a bit, but I could stay. I could be there. I could pour coffee. I could, you know, show up in the morning with donuts and juice. You know, this whole notion of leadership is just, it's not that complicated, and she is arguably the most abject failure of a leader I've seen, at least this side of de Blasio.
Every person I talk to, that even talks to aldermen and stuff, says she has the thinnest skin ever. You can't even come up with the other or the point of view where you're permanently branded as something, especially if you're white and old guy on a guy. I mean, forget it. I mean, it's really something. I don't get this whole thing. I really don't. I don't. It doesn't seem to be much in terms of talent. There doesn't seem to be much in terms of reserve knowledge. I mean, as my mom used to say, just in the corporate world, she says you hire these people, they have this huge reputation, they're supposed to have all this stuff behind them, and on most days you don't need them, and the one day you do, you find out they got nothing, but you paid them anyway. And is that the truth or what?
I mean, it is the truth. I mean, leadership is about serving the people who work for you, not commanding them. And it's this notion is just completely lost on the woman.
But I don't. I've been wondering, Kevin. I'll ask the question. I've been pondering. In government, in a lot of ways, is the old adage: you get what you vote for, you get who you are, or whatever. Is what we see now just totally a reflection of the population itself, the me first world, or is it we're just electing bad people, or are they just the people now?
I think it's more political tribalism. I really do. I think we're gonna vote for my team no matter what, no matter who. And you know, it's the same kind of thing. You got people defending Nancy Pelosi for going to a shuttered hair salon yesterday to get a haircut when California has ordered that you can't do that. And it's just lost on her that it's a bad idea to do it. Sure, you need a haircut. Is it a big deal? Did she, you know, give anybody a virus or anything? No, of course not. But is the notion of how to be a leader completely lost on her? Absolutely. Are people going to justify it because she's on my team? Yes. Are people going to jump all over it and blow it out of proportion because she's on your team? Yes. And I think that's really where we are. I think that's why we get such bad leaders, is because, you know, it's cheering for the domestic abuser on your baseball team because it's your baseball team. It's that kind of mentality.
Well, I mean, I think when you look at it, and I don't want to, well, I'll make the, I watch the people now that are on TV talking about the COVID. And it's, you know, we don't want to talk about the disease itself. We've done that enough. But, and then I look
at, other than to say, I think we pretty much have done everything wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Go
but,
on.
Push back on that a little bit. I think we did everything wrong from the start because of lack of information. I do think that the shutting down in March just to see where we were was probably a good idea. But the inability to adapt after that, I don't know
if it was a good idea, but I could agree with you if you say it's understandable.
Yeah, understandable.
I can salute that, but since then, you know what? Everybody likes to use the word deniers. Let's call people data deniers.
Oh yeah. Well, I was getting a chicken sandwich at Al's, good place on North and Elston, and I've gone in there for my guys to. They love the chicken sandwiches there, right? So every time I go in there, the guy loves me. So we start BSing, and he's telling me, you know, I don't get this. He says, you know, we start out and I sort of agreed where people were going, but now he says all we're doing is picking winners. You get to open, you don't. I mean, you get to have these hours, you get to have those, and we'll shut you down. This happens, it has nothing to do with you. He goes, a lot of these tests are coming from outside of Chicago now. What does that even, what's even got to do with anybody here? And I'm listening to that guy. I'm thinking, does this guy listen to the show or what? But it has to do with, you listen to people's attitudes towards not opening. But it's totally lost in it. I mean, I've had workers at my house. There's people downtown here that are tenant bar. They're doing stuff in the neighborhoods. The garbage is always getting picked up. The mail's always showed up. I see the buses go by. Somebody's driving them. The amount of people working, the attitude we're getting now is that those people can work. Well, okay, well, we don't care if they get them. Just make sure they wear a mask and go home and can't come into my bar. I mean, I've never seen anything like this. And it has nothing to do with color. It has to do with status. I mean, look at the basketball, the NBA. When you withhold your services from somebody when you're getting paid, nobody. I forget what the movie was or whatever. And somebody was talking to the president, and the president goes, everybody works for somebody. He said, I'm different. I work for everybody. That's what makes this job so tough, or something along those lines. Doesn't everybody get? Everything you do is for somebody else. I mean, the services you perform. And what I do here, manage money for people, I do that for people. If I don't show up and something screws up and all of a sudden there needs to be a role to be made in their option position or something and I don't do it, I'm hurting somebody else, not me. Well, I guess it would hurt me if it's
a
client.
And what's going to happen if you say, oh, well, COVID-19?
Yeah. I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, you decide if you're an essential service, making $10 an hour, and you happen to be Hispanic, and you go home and your whole family's got it, and we don't care. I bet half the people that had it in some of these real blue collar places, they went to work anyway, Kevin. I mean, what's the hell? I mean, I'm not sick.
Didn't have symptoms, so they didn't know they had it anyway.
Right. I mean, the whole way this is being done is, you know, then you have people. I'll say that one. You know, you make the comments. People should not. I mean, the people making the calls in the school system, hey, at the end of the day, the teachers are the hired help. I mean, I hate to have anybody say that about anybody, but when it got to the CBOE, I mean, they had guys, of course, they ended up flexing their muscles and doing stuff they shouldn't have, and the members let them get away with it. But basically, the staff was the hired help. And they put
your job virtually always, and I off the top of my head can't think of one, but your job is to serve others,
right? But I don't see this thing in the NBA. Well, we're not playing, we're not doing this. Feel the way you're going to feel. Do your maybe write something up. God help them. They probably can't even do that. Some can. I'm sure LeBron could. I mean, there are a lot of guys that can. But write something up and publish it. This is the way I feel. I mean, where I'm going with this, Matty, is that when this was before Kevin and my time at Notre Dame. Was it 2 years before I got there, Kevin, they had the strike?
It was 60s, yeah. I know where you're going with this.
Well, so everybody decided they're going to strike, yet the seniors still wanted to graduate. And Ted Hesburgh said, okay, strike if you want. I'm not going to let me, I'm not going to get in the way of anybody's personal feelings, but if you're going to strike, I want a serious paper about why you're striking, what's going on wrong, what the politicians are doing wrong, and how you would fix it, and how you would make it better, or something along those lines. He said, it better be good. You're not just sitting home in a dorm drinking beer saying, and not going to class. That's not happening. And I think the people who did strike did that, probably learned a lot in the project, and I don't have any problem with that. The idea is, I'm just staying home, send me the check, screw you. That does nothing for me, Kevin. I'll say this about the teachers. I've been a little too hard on the teachers because, as usual, I think that the teachers that actually have people working full-time from home are probably working harder than they do in a class because it's different. But I would say, as usual, it's probably 20% of the shall we say, the people we're paying in education. I don't know what the other people do at home, but I know some teachers that are working really hard. And then there's some school districts where the day is half as long. But I don't know. I mean, the Chicago Public Schools, the end of the day in this, Kevin, the breach between the haves and the have-nots, and in the city, not necessarily even with the, but I'll say even the white and the black, is immeasurably wider than it was before this started because of the way this education's going down. You can't tell me that the juniors and seniors of Chicago Public Schools and, like, Inglewood High School are at home poring over a computer. In last year, what they said, they lost track totally of 2,200 kids who were seniors in high school?
Well, and what's the disproportionate effect? If you're low income, do you have internet?
Well, I'm going to say no.
Do you have robust internet so that you can actually do distance learning properly?
I'm going to say no.
Is it safe to, are you in a relatively safe neighborhood so that you can still achieve some level of socialization? So that you don't go completely crazy, kids need that. Kids need to be able to. They want to see their friends. They need to get out and see others and socialize. That's an important part of what we do, and we're just taking that away from them.
What do you do if you have five kids?
Taking it away from them because either teachers are either being political in many cases or it's simpler than that. They're just scared.
That could be. And in that case, you put the shingle out and you say, who wants to come teach? It's going to come to that, Kevin. You know it's going to come to that.
Well, I think it will. And one of the things that you have to do, I understand that someone might be scared. I get that. Emotional maturity is facing your fears, assessing the risk, and then mitigating it where you can. And if you just can't, it's like you said, okay, I can't do the job anymore. And you make that conscious decision that you won't work so that you move aside and somebody else can. But otherwise, you figure out how to mitigate the risk in an acceptable way for yourself, and then you go about your business. This I'm too scared, there's a thunderstorm, I'm going to cower in the corner, that's the stuff that three-year-olds do.
Well, I mean, I think it's there's always going to be people, certainly on a college level, because I think the teachers are older, but that's a gross generalization, but there's always going to be people that maybe you had a bout with cancer and you're in remission or something, or you're still taking a chemo shot once a month, and a bad flu comes in and it's 5 below 0. Well, I'm going to say that you're much greater at risk going out that day than you or I are going out for COVID, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you could have some sort of other disease where you're if you have any kind of lupus or anything like that, and there's a cold or flu running around, it's going to find you, I think. I'm not a doctor, but everybody has that, has some degree. Everybody's risk factors are not the same, and there's always going to be somebody that's kind of over the top. If your ticker's horrible and it's going to snow 8 inches that day, and you're a regular guy, you don't want to take the chance that you got to like shovel yourself out of some place, right? You might want to stay home. But
that would be wise.
Yeah, but if you reach the point where this is happening a lot, it's time for you to pass the baton, right?
I think that's exactly the point. We're totally in agreement on
that.
I go back, and this is this is just standard emotional maturity, and
right.
It's so very much lacking, and it's infuriating to watch it.
Two things I need to say. One is, we had a listener yesterday that called me out on my cameras, and I want to fight back like a little terrier, or a big fat terrier, one or the other. But we also have a bad piece of news. We had Dr. J's dad died the other night, and,
oh no.
Yeah. No,
had he been ill?
He'd been, I don't know how the hell, usually Armenian dudes, don't have a lot of problem with Alzheimer's, but he had issues the last few years, and to see a man that brilliant. I mean, for those that don't know, John's dad was on the cover of every major news magazine for liver transplants for little kids and the whole bit. And he was in a, and John said he didn't even know who he was when he went to go see him, type of thing. He'd want to leave and go play football. The guy, for a doctor, the dude knew, we'll talk a bit more about after the break, but talk about a different world. But he wasn't just, you know, Jan's my friend and he's his dad. We were real tight. I mean, real tight. Real tight with the family. He was tight with mine. The old man, I tell you what, Kevin, I don't know a guy on earth that loved football more than that guy. I mean, there were many a time when back in the 80s, when Pete was still playing in Minnesota, where Jan and I we'd drive to Reagan, we'd get in the car, we'd get in Jan's goofy Firebird, and we'd head down to Illinois, or we went to Illinois, we went to Indianapolis, watch Pete play the old man, and always fly down there and meet us. He didn't care. Because Pete was playing, he was there. But then, of course, he'd be operating at, 7:30, and all of a sudden, we'd get one room, we'd all pile in, and all of a sudden, 4:30 in the morning, I heard a door click, and he's gone. He's got a surgery at 7:30. He'd be out of there. I don't know, he found a flight from Indianapolis to Minnesota at, like, 6 a.m., but he did. And, just the nicest man. But to talk about a different world when he was playing at Cal, talk about a laugh for the break. It's an interesting story. SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 122. It's like a regular day. Here, we'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs, Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Kevin O'Neill is with us. We have Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures up 23.25. No, this isn't yesterday's show. This is today's show. Same number every day. NASDAQ futures up 125, Dow futures up 175. Again, we've got Apple up another almost $3, which would be $15. So Apple would be pushing 670 now before the split. And with all the China situations going down, it's pretty scary that the stocks that are doing the best are the ones that are, they're head up behind of China, but that's where we're at. It's just kind of bizarre world, in my opinion. DAX up 279, 2%. FTSE up 85, 1.5%. CAC and Ron up 1.7. 107, it's 2.1%. Just giddy on up. Nikkei up 109.5%. The Shanghai is down 5. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 64.2%. Bonds, 0.68. They're coming down again, the rate, which is crazy. The Bund minus 0.45. Japan positive 0.04. Oil up 27 cents to 43.03. It's right at this 43 number every morning. It kind of moves the rest of the day, and we're right back there just about every morning. Brent up 32 cents, 45.80. Natural gas down 6 cents now, 2.46. This is down pushing 20 cents after the heat wave, and the west has subsided just a little bit. RBOP up 2 cents to 124. Last but not least, we had gold down $11, 19.67. Silver down 86 cents. That's a big move, 27.78. Copper 303, unchanged. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi, Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a major issue down on the Stevenson, Chief. Southbound side between Illinois 126 and US 30 is backed up all the way to Route 53. Apparently there was three separate crashes that happened earlier this morning, and at least one involving serious injuries. So an investigation with crews on the scene has caused this closure, but it has the outbound I-55 closed. Again, between Illinois 126, which is exit 261, and US 30, which is exit 257, and has delays all the way backed up to Route 53, which is exit 267. So avoid that if at all possible. No issues on the inbound side at this hour. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay as well. No issues on the Eisenhower. Easings and Kennedy are all quiet. Lakeshore Drive looking good, too. Only other crash in the area is out in the western suburbs. Looks like we have an accident. Route 83, which is Kingery Highway, at 3rd Avenue in the western suburbs. And that's causing some delays there. Weather today, clouds early, and then we'll clear up and have a nice summer day here, late summer day. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 85. Right now it's overcast and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 86. In sports, Cubs jumped all over the Pirates and built a 6-1 lead, and then John Lester fell apart. The bullpen wasn't much better, and they blew that lead and went to extra innings. And then after a long rain delay, the Cubs were able to tack on a run in the 10th and another one in the 11th before finally holding the Pirates and beating Pittsburgh 8-7 in 11 innings last night. White Sox have won 12 out of 15, but lost last night 3-2 in Minnesota. Sox had a 2-0 lead in that one, couldn't hang on. They'll try to salvage the final game here to win that series later on tonight in Minnesota. Lastly, the Diamondbacks were doubled up by the Dodgers, 6-3.
Jamie. Yeah, I mean, just to continue real quick on Jan's day, talk about a different world. Like, Kevin, when, I mean, Jan's day was a real big man, much bigger than Jan, and, huge hands, but he was one of the first big guys to play in the Pac-10. And he was in med school. So, now, can you imagine that today, Kevin, where they didn't get, there was no give on the labs or anything, right? He wasn't med school, he was in pre-med. So he could only go to practice, you know, when he could. And the coach said to him, Jan, if you can make it out here for practice, please do. And if you can help us out on a Saturday, if you practice enough, we'll get you in there because we need you. Can you imagine that today?
No.
No.
Yeah.
No, we would steer you into general studies.
Yes, and when he, one of his contemporaries was Frank Gifford, and Frank, I think, went to Southern Cal. They were buddies, and Frank became a pro, and I think he made, I think Dr. J's dad told me $7,500 his first year or something like along those lines, maybe not even that, it was maybe less than that. And he said, I think I'm going to stick with being a doctor, because I guess he had, you know, they wanted him in the pros. And he said, you know, there's no money there compared to being a, plus you get banged up. If I get my hands banged up, it's not exactly what you want to do to be a surgeon type of thing. I used to watch
sort of the Moonlight Graham of football, huh?
Yeah. But the guy had his monster hands, and he could take one of those little matchbooks, and he could take surgical thread and tie the knot with two fingers in the matchbook. He'd sit there and practice. And a lot of what these guys do is, I mean, being able to tie knots inside of people and those kinds of things. I mean, those are the guys that are, and it's amazing. He would tell me sometimes the guys with the biggest hands you would never guess would be surgeons. This one guy was operated for him. God, the guy had the weirdest name. Something right out of the hood was, you know, big long first name. And he was like 350-pound black dude. The guy had hands he could palm a basketball like almost all the way around. Said he had the best touch of anybody he ever saw in the operating room. I mean, if you wanted somebody operating on you, you wanted this guy. Because his hands were just steady as a machine. And, you would just never guess that guys like that would be that good. But they are. And, anyway, interesting stuff. And we lose a good one. And,
well, R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. And, good family the whole bit. Anyway, I was mentioning that Chicago has, I've mentioned they had more cameras than anybody else but London. Of course, I get called out on it, which is fine. I like to keep myself somewhat accurate. I will confess that the article that I read originally did not count China. Okay, so because I don't know how you get the numbers out of China anyway, but people do, so of course I dig yesterday. And so China, out of the top 20 cities in the world, most of them are in China. Well, it turns out, other than that, I was correct. Chicago is... Atlanta has essentially snuck in ahead of Chicago since I read the article, so I'm wrong. It goes London, Atlanta, Chicago, and for cities outside of... Actually, Dubai and Singapore are slightly ahead of Chicago, so there's a couple here. But Atlanta, the top nine are all Beijing and Guangzhou. But Atlanta has 7,800 cameras for 501,000 people. It's 15.6 cameras per 1,000 people. Chicago, we have 35,000 cameras, but we only have 2.6 million people. So that's 13 cameras per 1,000. But get a load of this. In China, this is so wild. Now, here we go. One of them way in the top here is Wuhan. There's 60 cameras for every 1,000 people. 500,000 cameras and for 8 million people. You think they didn't know people were sick? Come on. But here's the winner. Chong Qing. Have you ever...
I don't know it.
Well, yeah. We should. 15 million people. Jesus. I mean, look at all these places in China. Tianjin, 13.3 million people. God bless. Guangzhou, 12.9 million people. Anyway.
Well, you know, Tom, once upon a time I heard that there were a hell of a lot of people in China.
Well, wasn't, I think at the turn of the last century, and again, if somebody will write in on this, but please do, because I'm kind of grasping a straw. I'm going to say that the turn of the last century, we went from 1899 to 2000, that, Chicago was like one of the top
1899 to 2000?
Yeah. Two centuries ago, whatever. I think Chicago was one of the top 10 cities in the world with 3 million people. Now we're not even in the top 150, are we? With allegedly 3 million people. We have 2.7, but the idea of all these places, and China's got, what, how many cities? How many people in China, how many cities in China are bigger than New York, in London? I mean, it's unbelievable. But, so London has 68 cameras per 1,000 people. That's a lot. But the leader is Chongqing with 168 cameras per 1,000 people. That's a lot. Who the hell?
Chicago's population, by the way, peaked in 1950, the 1950 census.
Right.
It was 3.62 million. So it went from 1 million in 1890 to 1.7 in 1900. To 2.1 to 2.7, big jump from 1910 to 1920. Then from 1920 to 1930, 2.7 to 3.3, and then it kind of stayed around 3.3, 3.4, and then 1950 jumps up to 3.6, and then it started trending downward. 3.5, 3.3, 3 million in 1980, 2.7 in 90. Then it grew a little bit to 2000 in the 2.8 range, and it stayed in the 2.8 range until about 2009, and then it's been in the 2.6, 2.7 range since.
The big growth you saw...
Is that the city and not the metro area?
That's just the city proper. Yeah, the metro area is like 9 million.
Well, you kicked a whole bunch of people out when you built the Dan Ryan. So you probably lost several hundred thousand people there.
Yeah, I mean, that was in what, 50?
The late 50s.
So, yeah.
Opened in 62.
So from 50 to 60, it goes from 3.62 to 3.55. So, I mean, it was pretty marginal.
Right, but the jump up you saw from the...
But the big decline was way after that.
Yeah, but the big jump you saw was mostly... Was that the Great American Migration, Kevin, where all the people from the rural South came up to work in the factories in Chicago? It's pretty much...
Well, you had that, and at the same time, though, you had the migration to suburbia.
Right, but the
increase in population, yeah, that came from 1910... through 1950, that 40-year period, that was when it grew the most. I don't know, is that for the factory work for the wars? I don't know what it was.
If you were to see the African-American population, it would bulge in that area somewhere, and virtually everybody came up on the IC. Everybody took the train to Chicago, got off, found a job in a factory, and there were nothing but jobs.
Yeah.
And then,
like I said, you started to see... It really started shrinking, but then it kind of stayed the same for a long time in the 2000s, and now it's shrinking again because people left and went to the suburbs, but then people came back. I don't know. It's just interesting to look at the graph.
Well, when Chicago had 300,000 people, which is like way, way, way back, I read a lot about the city, the history of the city, and they had more. I'll use the term sewage between the stockyards and the tanning factories. They had more sewage than London did. London had 3 million people.
Wow. Oh.
Because we had probably a million cows, right? Right, Kevin? We're hanging here, too, with sewage. So
hanging around back of the yards was a scented delight, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
There's your name for today's show, the scented delight.
Well, suffice it to say, the yards went from, what, 37th to 47th, correct? And we lived on 50th Street. So, two blocks east of, west of Halsted. So, you can imagine you didn't really want a northerly breeze. Just saying.
You definitely did not.
No.
And you could go to something at the International Amphitheater, and again, it was quite the aromatic experience.
Well, and they not just the cattle, but the rendering plants that were surrounded the place.
Oh yeah, all of it. Yeah.
Yeah, just was
Chicago Metro right now, according to the most recent data, 9.53 million, which is still third largest in the U.S. behind L.A. and New York.
But and now we're down to 7 million of it's outside the city.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Or 6.5. Now, how far does the metro go? They used to call those. They used to call them what, Kevin? Standard metropolitan statistical areas. How was that?
SMSAs. Yeah.
But I mean, they're all the way out to like Naperville and stuff now, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's.
Oh, we're probably farther than that now.
Yeah, the core.
The only question is, does it include Milwaukee or not? I said that just to piss off all my Milwaukee friends.
The core cities that it includes are Naperville, Joliet, Aurora, Elgin, Waukegan. They appear to count Kenosha and Hammond as well. So some Wisconsin, some Indiana.
Yeah. Well, you know, this week
Wisconsin can keep Kenosha.
Yes,
I agree.
But the interesting thing is some cities, everybody, every city, they take Indianapolis. You've been to Indianapolis, haven't you, Manny?
Many times.
Well, Indianapolis, the
one of the only major cities you can drive through in like 5 minutes.
It was also, at one point, was the
Milwaukee
only.
Milwaukee was always that way. It was one of the nice things when I lived up there.
Well, they were the only city over a million people in the U.S. for a long period of time that wasn't on a navigable piece of water.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah. What made people settle there? Was it a rail line or something?
I think it was a big rail hub, wasn't it?
Yeah, must have been.
Our man is bringing coffee. I love this guy, Russell. The
Denver doesn't have water.
At the time, it wasn't a million when people were saying that.
Yeah, but
Denver, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Denver's on the edge of the mountain, so it's like last stop before it gets not navigable anymore.
Right, right. What about Phoenix? Are they on water?
They got a dry river.
They have a dry, canal.
They'd love to have water in Phoenix.
They'd love to have water in Phoenix.
Because Phoenix has really grown like crazy, and I think they're top five now, in top five or six in population.
Well, one of these days, our friend Tom Conway has declined to come on a couple times because I'd love to have him on with Lou, but he's become very apolitical, so he doesn't come on anything. But he's my buddy from NOAA, and when you look at the water, we should do a half-hour thing. Kevin and I could probably do it. And just the water and out west versus here. Out there, you don't own any of your own water. You have water rights to stuff. Even you can't even in the in Phoenix, if you have a gutter on your roof or one time it rains and you gather that water in a bucket, that's against the law. It's not yours. It's unbelievable how they are, but because there's just not enough. But here we're trying to hold the lake back, for God's sake. It's just a whole different world.
And real quick on populations. So I'm looking at the top 13 by actual population in the city limits, not counting metro area. Like I said, New York is 8.4, LA is 3.9, Chicago is 2.7, Houston is 2.3, gaining. Phoenix is 1.6, Philly 1.5, which Philly used to be the second biggest city back in the day. San Antonio is growing like crazy. They're 1.5. They're the seventh largest city now. San Diego is 8th. Dallas 9th and San Jose is 10th, which you wouldn't guess when you think of the Bay Area. You think of San Francisco and Oakland, but San Jose is actually bigger than both of them.
You see, some of these guys are cheating, though, Manny.
Well, I agree, but of all of those, all of them are in the green, growing like crazy. And if you go further, like Fort Worth has grown by 64% in the last 20 years. Jacksonville's grown by 23%. Austin, Texas by 43%. Chicago's the only city in the red. It's in the last 20 years. Yeah. It's shrunk by 6%.
Well, the we've not...
Give it a year for New York.
What I mentioned about Indianapolis, though, they have, when you go down there, there was an interstate through the place, right? Because the Interstate Highway Act and so on. Well, then everybody built the go-arounds.
Right.
They call them a circumferential is the name for it. Now here, since we've got a lake on one side, the tri-state goes around, but it'll go all the way around, right? But what Indianapolis did when they were going to build that, they annexed all the property out to it. Okay, so those were suburbs or little towns or villages. We didn't do that here. And now Toronto, one of the things, the big news a few years ago was Toronto has gotten bigger than Chicago. When I was up there, when I was in first grade, we lived up there for a couple of months. We lived in a suburb called Dan Mills. Well, Dan Mills is now in the middle of the city because they annexed all those burbs.
Right.
So here you could make a case, although nobody would want it to happen, that Evergreen Park, Oak Lawn, all those places, there. I mean, if you go out west, there's Broadview, there's Melrose Park. These places are like a 2 or 3 square miles in their own village. You could easily make a case, you know, if Chicago was managed anywhere near properly, that Chicago should go all the way out to the toll road. You know, you don't need... There's got to be... What would you guess?
When was the last time Chicago annexed land?
I don't think they ever have.
Well, I know... Well, the reason I ask is because I'm pretty sure that, like, way back in the day, I'm talking, like, late 1800s, like, Lakeview was considered a suburb.
Could be.
And then they...
I think Beverly Hills was a suburb, too.
Yeah.
Way back.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So at some point, they did that, and then they just stopped. They never did it with, like, Evanston or Skokie or Oak Park or, like you said, the Orland.
But I don't know that... I don't think Beverly... It was an area. I don't know if they ever had their own police force, fire department. I don't think they ever did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what the interesting part, what I'm getting to the punchline here, if there is one, when I was driving back from Phoenix with my red truck that I bought out there, all of a sudden I'm like in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma, which, you know, it's easy to be in the middle of nowhere.
It's redundant.
Yeah, it's redundant. and all of a sudden I see this sign, Oklahoma City, city limits.
I've seen that same
and
sign.
And I mean, there's nobody. What are you, 30 miles from town?
I've seen that same sign, and you're like, this is the start of the city? No wonder they're growing so fast.
Yeah.
I know why that is.
Why is it?
Being an Oklahoma State guy. The city's actually surrounded by an Indian reservation, so they're delineating the difference between the two.
But there's no suburbs.
But really, Tulsa and Oklahoma City are practically surrounded by Indian reservations.
Interesting.
And if you look at a reservation map of Oklahoma, you'd be like, oh my God, 80% of the state is actually Indian reservations. But that's why they're delineating it so far out in the middle of nowhere, and that's why, you know, it's because it's one or the other.
We also don't want all this stuff. Yeah. I mean, Chicago, I mean, there's got to be, I mean, you can make the case that Oak Lawn's big enough, Evergreen Park's big enough to have a, you know, mm-hmm. self-rule, but you got West. I worked for Allied Van Lines. What, Broadview, you could walk across it in like a minute. I mean,
Harwood Heights. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, come on. Those things are, you don't even know. Plus, you go into, you're in Chicago, you go through Harwood Heights, and then you're back in Chicago. Right?
Yeah.
But it's, anyway, this is one of the reasons why, but anyway, I want to talk while you guys are both here.
Mm-hmm.
I was going through yesterday, because we're trying to tie the market into what's going on out there, and we're trying, the companies that are doing well, even though there's money pouring in, are they doing well because they're doing well? Or are they doing well because everybody else got closed? And there's probably a little bit of all that going on. But my, how much further can we get out on this? I got my debtclack.org up here. And I think everybody should take a look. Not that you want to reach for your sickness bag, but if you look at the taxation of the federal government, I was mentioning this a little bit yesterday, the income tax revenue of the federal government is only $1.5 trillion a year. Right? And the payroll is like $1.1 trillion, but that's all going to stuff, right? So when you talk about $1.5 trillion and everybody in the country has got their hand, their foot, and any other appendage they might have out for these guys to give you money, we're already up to this year with the $6 trillion deficit we're going to have or whatever, 5 point something. We're talking about, we're pushing 4 to 5 years worth of taxes in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the states, I mean, you talk about people, Pelosi, some of the Republicans, every state. I mean, the state revenue is $2.1 trillion. So if they double up this year on their expenses versus their revenue, which I think they will easily do. I mean, the numbers are just not there for the Fed federal government to bail. They're just not big enough in our system of taxation. I mean, we're talking about local tax revenue is $1.3 trillion. State tax revenue is $2 trillion. So put those together, you're talking like 4-6. If those guys, like, if they screw up and double that up this year, which I don't see as not a possibility to you. I mean, with all the stuff going down, and if people don't stop paying their taxes, how the hell is the Fed gonna come up with, are we gonna spend the tax returns for like the year 2025, like the song says, or what? mean, we're not even close. I mean, everybody's convinced these guys, there's a limitless spot, and we have economists telling them that. Where are they getting that from?
Well, it's modern monetary theory where you're able, if you can print your own money, you're in great shape, and you can never run out of it.
But will it be worth it? I'm saying most people think that
that's the other part of it. Yeah,
this is what you get when you know. I'll take a shot here. This is what you get when you listen to one percenters on TV,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not it's CNBC, whether or not it's CNNBC or whatever, MSN or Fox, or whatever you're talking to, we're talking to one percenters, and when they say taxes, because they're making, in my opinion, way too friggin' much to read a monitor, but that's not my call. When you're making $1.5 million a year to sit there, when you talk taxes, you're talking income tax.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the society, when they talk taxes, it's not income tax. It's payroll tax, it's property taxes, it's sales tax. It's the stuff
in front of you, in your face.
One of the guys in the building here just bought a new truck, one of my Hispanic buddies. I think he said it was the total value of the deal. I calculated this a while ago, and all these went up. It's so like $800. To do your title,
to enter the state,
do all the other stuff, and just the new plates, all that stuff. It's like if you're making $10 an hour, it's like your first 2 weeks go to the state just to transfer your car to you. I mean, so the whole idea that what taxation even means to people, you know, the median salary in the country is what, 36, and I think my brother Dan, because he knows how to do all this stuff. He told me one day. I asked him that if you make less than 40, you don't even pay any federal taxes, income taxes. You're paying payroll, but all the other stuff they're in you for everything, right? So when we talk about the federal government,
what you're really saying is we're completely bleeped here.
Well, I mean, we're gonna have to find a way.
Yeah, that sums it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, in terms of expecting everything from there, I mean, I think we got to stop some of the largesse. I mean, I think we got to get people. We're not going to be able to give the airlines another $50 billion, is what I'm saying. We got to get people back flying. I don't think people realize Kevin and I talked earlier, the mental issues of keeping the guy in Florida this morning, the governor finally said you go visit your mother in the nursing home. For God's sake. I mean, now, the UK wants people to go back to work because they're citing mental health issues of the whole country. I mean, somewhere along the line here, we're going to have to wake up and realize that this stuff's happening. It's not my call today. I'm not going to tell somebody to go to a bar and catch a disease. It's not my job, but we're reaching the point here where the dangers are pretty high, is all I'm saying. Just saying. Kevin, do you disagree?
No, I don't at all. I guess people like you and me, we can thank our lucky stars that we're old. We'll get to sit in the rocker on the porch and watch it all go by, but sorry, Matt, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah,
no, I've known that for a long time.
Yeah, but I gave you coffee, so it's okay.
But it really did help today.
I have a question. I think when I cleaned my place out last time, I found my college ID. Kevin, does that mean I can go to a game?
Oh my God, that means you're a pack rat.
Yeah, does that mean I can go?
It might mean you can get into a game.
Did you still have gray hair?
No.
Just wondering.
Tom looks pretty much like he did, but you know, back then too.
We all do.
He was always an old man.
But I don't know if I could. So what? They're going to let students and parents in, and everybody else who bought a ticket. They want you to have them
students,
keep the money.
Parents and faculty on a rotation. Some faculty will be able to go. And one thing you need to know about Notre Dame football is the faculty has always had access to tickets, and it has always been a big money maker for them. As soon as they get their hands on the tickets, up they go on the ticket services, and faculty makes a lot of money on scalping tickets. Not this time; they're not letting you in without without the ID. So even if you manage to wrangle a faculty ticket, not everybody's going to get them. You're going to either have to go or pass on the ticket.
What more of a question for you and Mr. Weber than maybe Russell, though he can opine in. As the year wears on, what do you think? What do you think the pressure is going to be, the history be written? How are the people in Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State going to feel if the Irish are playing football every week? and doing it successfully.
According to the president yesterday, we're on the 1 yard line, and the Big Ten will start soon.
I thought it's a little too late for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm not buying that. I think that we have governors blocking it too. Who, you know, governors are saying no, we're not going to okay the gatherings in our state, which includes our own Governor Whitmer here in Michigan, and you know, so I and they're pretty dug in. I mean, did you see Oregon's governor just extended the state of emergency in Oregon through guess what date?
Election.
Yeah, November 3rd.
Unbelievable. So why no tailgates?
Because people won't socially distance in tailgates. They won't do what we tell them to do.
Jesus. How are we going to keep socially distancing when we're trying to get our birth rate up?
I don't know, but if that's really the goal, I'll see how I can help out.
Well, I was real quick, and I'll let you go, Kevin. I'm sitting at when they first opened. I'm sitting in the outside at the Tripoli, and there's this guy and this girl. It looked just like a match.com date. And they're sitting right next to me. And I was waiting for somebody who, of course, was late, and so they're talking loud, and I got still pretty good ears for my age. And they're talking about how they're always wearing a mask, they're socially distancing, and they're like 8 feet apart. And I'm sitting there thinking, there's nothing happening here tonight. or what do you do now? Instead of ripping your clothes off, you rip your mask off? Is that the...
We could have a whole... We'll dedicate Friday's show to that. How's that?
So you whip your mask off, you mean you're in? Oh, God. Anyway, S&P futures up 20, Nasdaq futures up 114. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye!
ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Blowing up Big Stacks Jack, I'm Tim Allies. Professor Russell Rhodes, Matt Weber on the board. The S&P futures up 20, Nasdaq futures up 116. We're up a little more. We're supposed to be up 25, and we're also up 160 every day. That's what we do now, Russell.
Yeah.
Just saying.
We automatically rebound.
So I'm looking at Zoom is down $6 this morning. It's only trading $4.50. I got their revenue at $11 a share. And earnings at $4. Max, because they came out.
Yeah, and
best quarter ever.
It's not going to continue out forever because, I mean, there are entities that are, such as Loyola University of Chicago, who are using Zoom to the max right now, but it will taper off, but it's sure not going to, I don't see where extra growth is going to come from. I mean, anybody that is going to use it is already using it, so, are they now reaching are they a mature company that you should value as that's all they're ever going to do? You know, that they're not going to continue to grow it?
Well, I mean, there's that question.
Yeah.
And there's also the, I don't want to make ethnic jokes, but let's just say.
But I will.
Let's just say when you have the Eastern European who likes to own the apartment buildings, right? Which is nothing wrong with that, by the way. And if there's an 8-flat, and you say to the, Gustav, or whatever his name might be, I got this 8-flat for you. He's going to say, without even knowing it, the man is a master at the capital asset pricing model, correct? Mm-hmm. And he's going to say, I need to get 10% a year out of a place, because I can borrow money at 7, and I'll make 3. So if you say, my 8-flat, every year with enough money in the till for a rainy day roof and everything, put aside, I make $100,000 a year. And he's going to say, I'll give you $1 million. Right off the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if his number was, if he could borrow money at 3%, he'd say, I'll give you $2 million. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just one versus the other. And, but when you get to the edges, now you got a problem. Because now if the interest rate's 1%, he's going to say, well, I'm not going to give you $100 million, right? Yeah. I mean, at some point, it's like the old, how many, you need to drink water for a marathon, but if you drink 5 gallons, you're dead type of thing. You know, mm-hmm. when you get to the edges. Now, the question is, here's a company, if you're Gustav, or me, or you, or Maddie, Matt Gustav, that'd be a great name, Matt Gustav.
I like it.
And I like that.
It's not bad.
That's a tough dude. You wouldn't mess with that guy out of the gate, I'd say.
Sounds like a bad guy in a Marvel comic to me.
Yeah, it does.
Go ahead. It does.
So here we are at, say, 450. We're rounded here. Now, Mr. Gustav is going to say, that company should be making 45 hours a year, and they should be sending me a check for 20. Otherwise, why the hell are they trading 450? Now, he'd be wrong, but it could be 40. I mean, but I'm saying, when if ever do we expect that to happen from these guys? It's one thing if you're new and you're grown and you're on your, and you see the possibility there, but it's not going to be, let's say it's 10 years mm-hmm. or 20 years. Now, if the interest rates were normal, I mean, there was a time, Russell, I mean, people don't even recognize, I mean, maybe they don't know what I'm talking about, but there was a time when if you told somebody in 1979, hey, I'm going to give you $1 million, 20 years from now, the guy'd almost say, don't bother.
Right? Yeah, because you just kind of back, it's about 30 grand.
Yeah, it was like a 12%, don't bother. But I mean, when do we see Amazon, even with all the perks they've gotten from governments all along the line, tax perks, you name it, we're not even going into it. I mean, when is that company going to make $300 a year and send you a check for $100? I mean, in anybody's grandkids' lifetime?
Probably not, but you know, I'll pull that old Wall Street saying out that the market can remain irrational longer than you can solve it.
I never said short it.
Yeah. No, I know. I know you didn't, but I'm just saying that I don't think even the owners of some of these stocks that have done what they've done this year really believe that the financials back up what they've got. But I'll use the Chuck Prince quote. As long as the music is playing, you gotta keep dancing. And right now, the thing that keeps you dancing the best is buying just a handful of stocks that have benefited from the current situation and continue to go up.
Okay, now would critique me on this, Professor. Mm-hmm. I like that Professor. That's a
I'm not just a professor.
Yeah, it's like the police on the South Side, mm-hmm. right?
You know, I'm like a professional escort or something like that.
I thought you were going to say a gadabout or something. But anyway,
she was a pro.
Yeah, she. where I'm heading with this is if your investment philosophy, which I think is what you just talked about, is that I really don't care about hanging on the Amazon for 10 years and all of a sudden getting this $50 check a year.
Right.
I'm not going to wait for that. I'm going to get my return because either people are going to think it's worth more tomorrow or the next day or next week or next month, mm-hmm. and the price is going to appreciate. I could call that the greater fool theory, or I could call it good investment, one or the other. But either way, the point is, the way you're going to get your return, Professor Rhodes, is that if you buy it today at, where the hell are we? We're at 35.37.
Good Lord.
When it gets to 3,800, mm-hmm. you need to take your profit. At some point, I'm not saying that 3,800 is a number or 4,000 or 5,000, but I'm saying with your investment philosophy, you have to take the profit. You're not, you've just told me that you're not going to wait till your kids get the $100 check a year. Because you don't think it's either never going to happen or it's not going to happen soon enough. So if your intent is to buy something at 100 and sell it for more, and that's the only way you're going to, quote, get your return, then you do have to, quote, sell it for more. Which mm-hmm. means someday, somewhere, you got to say, this is enough for me. If I leave a little something for the next guy, so what? But you can't just not sell it ever.
No.
And the
institutions have... Over decades now have gone from, you know, an average hold period of like 18 months to an average hold period of 6 months. So they're, even the professionals are, for the most part, playing this shorter term game than they did in the past.
Well, I have I've heard of, I do not have the client, I've heard of somebody calls me, I say, people ask me for advice, especially with older people, because I hate the hell to say it, because they must think I'm a contemporary or something. But get a load of this: the dude's got 200 shares of Amazon, and I'm going to say, you know, pick a number, $1,000 or something,
and it
gets to like 2,000 or 2,200, and the guy sells, I don't know if we have the conversation, but he sells one of the 2,800 calls, saying, boy, I'm going to be up so much money if this thing, 100 shares of my stock goes at 2,800. That's fine. So sure enough,
I'll be happy to sell it.
Yeah, sure enough, now the thing's 3,500, and the calls are $600 of the money. Now I could roll them up, probably $50 for a credit, and maybe catch it. I mean, that's what I'm really good at. I mean, it's you know, that's my skill set is not in just picking winners. Thank God, it's massaging a lot of the ones that aren't so hot into winners, right?
Yeah.
Because some you win, some you lose. It's ones in the middle that make the professional, right? But anyway, now the guy's apoplectic. God, the stock's 3,500.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to buy these back, the one back, at $700. I said, wait a minute, you said you wanted to sell it at 2,900, what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now it's 35.
Yeah, that's the covered call thing. When I was at the Options Institute, we'd always say you should, especially when you're starting out, maybe pick a price where you'd be a content seller of the stock, and you're not necessarily going to be happy about it if it blasts through to 3,500. And then you typically get these types of responses where, well, you know, I want to hang on to it. Look at how great it's done. And then, you know, basically cost them everything between 2,800 and 3,500 because they decided to buy the callback.
Which is
let it be called away and
just let it be called away.
Buy it on a dip, and maybe.
But let me work my magic. Let me roll it up, $40-$50 for credit, for three quarters or something. And you know what? If it's 4,000, then we got another $200 out of it. You're mm-hmm. $200 higher than you thought it was in the first place. Plus, you still got 100 shares. God bless. You can't. This is the one thing about traders versus. I hate to how to say this because everybody listens to a retail person. If a trader buys something at $5 and sells it at $8 because he thinks it's a good, but you really don't. You might 4 months later say, "Boy, I sold this at $8, and 4 months later was $65." But there's a buy price, and so you really maybe because you trade so much, you don't look back like that. Because
yeah,
but the difference is, but retail people, if they buy XYZ at $50 and sell it at $55, and a week later it's $60.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of one of those people should come in and bring coffee like you, and they should sit next to me. I've got I have 200 stocks on my screen here that my clients or other people's clients that call me have. Every day, there's going to be 30 of them that are up, 30 of them are down. What can I do? What am I going to do? Could be a self-flagellant like back in the Middle Ages and whap myself every time I look at one and I'm not in it.
Gosh, I hope not.
No, I mean, the idea of you make the decision.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. That's the way people look at. Because my girlfriend is my significant other is seriously into real estate, and I don't know, as usual, I like to think I'm pretty good at most things.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever she has a client over, I go the other way. Because she's so good at it, and she doesn't need me there. If I'm putting something together in my truck, I don't want her there either. Tell me I'm doing it wrong.
You know what I mean?
Really? It's just one of those things.
Is that the key to a happy life?
You just
staying out of the way.
As my grandfather used to say, when my aunt and my grandmother started to get into it, he goes, "Let you and I go downstairs. This is beyond our comprehension. Let's not even try and understand. I got a job to do. Let's go downstairs, and we got a chair we need to fix or something." He always had something to do. He just I gotta go.
I used to have that panic button thing that you could buy from the Staples. Probably need something that in my household when the ladies get into it that I could hit a button and it would remind me of that one.
I played handball.
Stay out of the door more.
I play handball with a guy 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. It's 6:30 in the morning, right by my house, and he'd come over to Payless. Plus, he'd always dress up. I said, "What do you dress up to go play handball?" Because if I don't, I forget a tie, I forget this, or I forget my cufflinks. This way, I know I got everything. He come over. I said, "The guy's name was Larry Stillman, the nicest man. He was the head of materials at Pullman." And I go, "Larry, what do you? You know, we could play at lunch." He goes, "No, I want to play in the morning." He goes, "You don't understand. I got a wife and two daughters, and all of a sudden, one daughter's got nothing to wear. The other one's got the other. What she's wearing is one the sister wanted to wear." And then the wife can't stay out of it. She gets embroiled. She can't just let them argue because the bus is coming in 10 minutes. It's only going to last another 10 minutes. She's got to get in the middle of it. And I just got to leave. I got to go. There's no room for me here. I can't add anything. I'm just gone. So, Maddie, when you get two daughters, I will say Jill, though, probably would stay out of the fray. She has some patience. But you never know.
You never know.
And anyway, what I'm saying is people will constantly look at this. Well, anyway, what I was saying is some people now have bought houses, say, 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they bought it for, $400, and they're selling it for $380, okay? A lot of these condos.
Who's doing that? Prices are, like, skyrocketing.
Not from where you went back to. Mm. But a lot of it, Maddie, though, to your point is, say, for instance, you and Jill bought a condo in 2007, and you paid $165 for it, and you've just lived there. You haven't made a mess out of it, but you've just lived there. Well, now it's 12 years later, 15 years later, whatever it is, and you've sort of worn out the bathrooms and the kitchen, and you probably need, now everybody wants hardwood and a set of rugs. So you've used up, let's say, $20,000 or $25,000 of a new place. So now a new condo is roughly the same price, but now it's new. So if you want to sell yours as is, you're going to sell it for, $145 instead of $165. Now you can say you lost money on it, or you could also say you used it it's like a 10-year-old car is not worth as much of a new one, In other words,
don't think people are taking a big bath on real estate right now.
But I'm saying, I didn't say big bath. I said that
you said they're losing $20,000. Now, well, I understand what you're saying. They wore it out a little bit, but I think they could still sell it for $200.
On a $400,000 house in the burbs, that house 10 years ago was $420,000, 400. You're about back to break even. Maybe a little up, maybe a little down, depending on your area. Just saying. But be that as it may, people will say, I didn't make any money on this house. But what they don't say is on a house previously that they bought in 2000 for 180, they sold for 290 to be able to buy the new one. They leave that part out.
Right.
So I'm saying, so my point is made, depending on the year you pick, you're, I mean, you know, like Audrey's place, since she bought it, she got a real nice ranch, and I'm going to say she's pretty much dead even from when she bought it. But now her dad's place and her condo that she sold to get in there, well, she doesn't mention that, and I don't bring it up, but she stuck them on both of those. This, the condo she sold for, I'm going to say 180, at best is 130 now. Because the area's gone, you know, the condo complex has gone down, and all the, you know, that kind of thing. So it depends on where you are in the chain, is my point. So there's always the story, then there's the story. Correct, Russell?
Yeah.
And, so anyway,
always more to the story.
Well, so what do you think with the Fed? I've never seen a Fed this mouthy. They're going to say they're going to be doing this forever. What exactly are these guys going to do if they get a 2/1% CPIs in a row?
They're going to stop printing money, but it's going to be a little bit too late to get it under control, and they've got no way to get it under control. They're sure not going to raise rates.
Why is it that a schlump like me, you know, not a schlump at managing money, I'm good at that, but, you know, I don't have a PhD, I don't have, I'm not a senator or on a Fed board. Why is it that I know absolutely, just maybe because I have the guys I had for teachers, that the minute you see you have inflation, it's too late?
Oh, yeah. Anything that you read on this tells you that the Fed's always, as much as they've tried to, they've never been able to get in front of inflation when it perks up. The other side of it is everybody has short memories, and when was the last time we had inflation?
I think we've been having it for a while.
Well, I know you think we've been having it for a while, but as far as the numbers show, when was the last time that we really had it? You've got people running around in the streets, very upset about a lot of things, justifiably upset about some of the things. You don't see anybody screaming and yelling about how much prices have been going up on them. I don't know if that's because they've been distracted by other things or what, but when I talk about inflation and try to get across that it's going to be an issue at some point in their lifetimes, I'm having to go back to when I was a kid to give good examples of it.
Here's why I think it's they've been able to sweep it under the rug, read lie. Mm-hmm. Is I think that the gorilla in the room is hospitalization. I mean, yeah. we can make a lot of other examples, but by and large, for the last 20 years, certainly since 2000. Maybe not quite at 2000, but it's been 20% of the economy, and it's been 5-6% of the CPI.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done nothing but go straight up. But because the people who, shall we say, have the microphone, not the people you and I know, have the microphone, have never paid it in their life. It's paid by their employer. They are either too economically stupid to realize that it's come out of their paycheck. In other words, if you're the 20-year guy on CNBC, the fact that your hospitalization is up three times in that period of time when the CPI says it should be 50% higher instead of not 50%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 50. Okay, where am I going? Instead of it being 1.5 what it was in 2000, it's three times as much. So you don't feel it because CNBC pays it.
Yeah.
So it's been able to be disguised.
It's something that's not right in front of you.
Right.
It's not, and that goes to, you know, a lot of the income taxes that we pay. It comes out of our check just like when we elect to take 5% out and throw it into retirement. It's just not right in front of you. The taxes they slap on, I think we talked about this last week, but if you take a look at your cable bill or your cell phone bill in Chicago, that the city's grabbing a bunch there from you as well. those things just kind of get absorbed in, so they it's almost like they're sneaking it past us.
Well, the other is education.
Yeah.
And the CPI does not, other than something having to do with rent, so it's not like it's totally lost, but it's they do not have there's not a property tax or fees for the city or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a spot for that in the CPI. Now, that again, by my calculations, in most places is up 2.8 times since 2000 rather than the 0.5 that the CPI. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that 60% of that in most localities is primary and secondary education. So that's lost as well. And now the higher education is another, you know, 0.4% or something of, or 0.3% of the CPI, and that is also up three times. So somebody like you, if you were paying your own hospitalization,
mm-hmm.
the property taxes you're paying, and you're going to send kids to a real school, but a private school, or even Illinois,
mm-hmm.
someplace like that, they're telling you that those three things are combined something like 11% of your CPI. And I'm going to say, you're going to say, bull bleep.
Oh, no, those are the things that keep me working two jobs.
The last time it happened,
Goddamn, 9 years. And then I'm going to sit on the porch in the rocking chair and watch everybody else implode.
Well, the last time, if you look at what people, other than maybe, even if you go to Home Depot and you buy a whole bunch of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have a pretty good memory on most things. I know that I'm getting squeezed a lot more than I was 3-4 years ago because I've been doing my projects for 5 years. I got a huge place and
mm-hmm.
going a little bit at a time. And I know that, I mean, I went to a plasterboard place, and the guy said they were up 10% 2 years ago in one January. I mean, it's still not, you know, it's still not something, you don't do it very often. But the thing in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
what's the one thing that every single time you notice when you do it, and it's the price is right in front of you, and it pisses you off if it goes up?
It was gas.
Gasoline.
Gasoline more than anything
now,
else.
Now, gasoline goes up a buck a gallon, everybody's fried about it.
Yeah.
You compare that to your hospitalization bill in a month. Come on. Not even on the same page. Who the hell pays $1,500 a month in gas unless like that's your job? You know, to do nothing but drive.
Yeah.
I mean who pays more in gasoline than in property taxes? Unless you got some guzzler like me, like I do my Suburban, and you're driving every day, which I don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean it's all about whether it's out in front of you. People will bitch more about gasoline paying more, $5 more in the pump, than they will if their hospitalization goes up, you know, $500 next January and the company pays for it. They don't realize that if the company wasn't paying for it, they might have gotten a raise for $500 a month.
Yeah.
The question is, why not? It's just different.
Yeah.
Plus, we're not in the more I reread it again this weekend. I went to Wikipedia and I read the comments from Mein Kampf on The Big Lie.
Uh-huh.
Which Hitler was spectacular at. By the way, he blamed it on the, he said he learned it from the Jews, which is interesting. but the point is, well, he claims.
No, I just.
No, but I mean, his point was that after World War One.
Oh, I know. No, it's just, yeah. I laugh because it retrospectively, I just can't believe that the whole population bought it, but they did.
But his point was, if you're in that kind of spot,
uh-huh.
I mean, I'm going to say in our country, look at the COVID stuff. Mm-hmm. If you go on Google right now, maybe I'll do it on break, and you look at COVID cases in China, the number's going to come up 85,000.
Yeah, it hasn't changed. Fixed it.
Yeah, they fixed it. So, yeah. I mean, but you're going to say, if you go to a bar, restaurant, coffee shop, wherever you happen to be, if you can get in one now, when you see the CPI number come across at, you know, 0.2%, and God, we need more inflation, you don't see 15 people stand up and say that's BS.
No.
Say, well, that's my government. I mean, you may think it's a little light, but you're not going to start a big war over it in the coffee shop or the bar. It gets grilled into you.
You're gonna start a war over it if you suddenly can't afford anything anymore.
Well, you'll reach a point where you'll say enough.
Yeah.
You know, S&P futures up 21, NASDAQ futures up 125. We've been there all morning. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Professor Russell Rhodes with us. You know, man, this would be a perfect time for us to audit one of Russell's classes. I got...
Oh, my goodness.
We have all kinds of people that have way too many tomatoes, and some have gotten soft, if you know what I mean. It'd be perfect projectiles, as they say. Anyway, S&P futures up 20, NASDAQ futures up 124. That's what we do every day now. Around the rest of the world, let's do the Dow first. I'll refresh everything here. The Dow is Dow's up 156. I've got, of course, Apple up 356. I've got what else we got? Well, Walmart was up a bunch yesterday. It's up another 333 yesterday. So it sold off the other day on the news about that TikTok thing and turned right around and whoever shorted it got it jammed right where the sun don't shine, that it threw them about 13%. When was the last time Walmart moved 13% in like 2 days? I mean, this is crazy world. Over in Europe, we got rallies as well. DAX up 279, that's 2.1%. Now, they didn't participate as much yesterday. FTSE up 94, that's 1.6%. CAC around up 115, 2.3%. Over in Asia, not much here. Nikkei up 109.5%. Shanghai down 6.2%. Hang Seng down 64.2%. So very quiet over there. Bonds, 10-year 0.68. It cannot get out of this 0.66 to 0.7 range. And that's bizarre when you think about it. The market doing what it's doing. A Bund, minus 0.45. It got down to minus 0.38. Now it's coming back the other way as well. Japan, 0.04 to the positive. Oil up 24 cents, 43 bucks even. Brent up 29, 45.87. Pretty significant drop there. Natural gas in the last few weeks when they were really having trouble, Russell, I believe, with the electrical grid out in Arizona. And
oh, yeah.
We're getting 118 every day, but back down to 100, 102, it's a lot easier. RBOB up a penny, $1.24. Last but not least, gold down $6, 1972. Silver down 63 cents, 28.01. Copper, 303. Hey, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Our issue on the outbound Stevenson is getting better, but still a significant slowdown. It was completely closed last hour. Now just the left lane is blocked just before US 30 on outbound I-55. There was three separate crashes that happened earlier this morning. One of them being serious, involving injuries, and an investigation with crews on the scene that caused significant delays. Again, it's opened up now, but the left lane is still blocked and still very slow, so expect delays on the outbound Stevenson if you're heading out that way as you approach the exit number 257, which is US 30. You'll run into major slowdowns there. Not affecting the inbound side, though. Inbound Rhine, I-57, and the Bishop Porter looking okay, too. On the Eisenhower, a bit of a slowdown as you're heading into the city, but no accidents or issues to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Off the expressways out in Wheaton, Roosevelt Road, at Winfield Road, there is a crash. And then it looks like we have a crash at 47th Street and South Pulaski as well. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early, some sun later on. We'll warm up a bit from yesterday, a high of 85. Right now it's overcast and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 104 today. Right now it's clear and 87. In sports, the Cubs have won a couple in a row. They beat the Pirates in extra innings last night, 8-7. That was the final in 11. White Sox lost to the Twins, 3-2. Sox had a 2-0 lead that couldn't hold on, but they've still won 12 of their last 15 and are tied with Cleveland in first place. And the Diamondbacks are really struggling. They're in last place in the NL West. They lost again to the first place Dodgers, 6-3.
Manny, how did the Bo Sox get so lousy? Just because they lost Sales, or other people lost other people as well?
Good question. I think they've had some injuries, and they're one of the worst teams in baseball this year, which is pretty surprising. You don't see that very often in Boston.
Well, I got to go. Plus, be nice to get all of them in a triple one night and make fun of them.
Yeah, I mean, you can make fun of the Bruins guys, though. They're still there, and the Celtics guys are there. It's interesting, though, because I really like baseball, and a lot of people don't care about baseball, but that's still probably my favorite sport to watch. But with the COVID realignment, you only see your regional teams now.
Yeah.
So you never go out west and you never go out east. So I feel like I'm very out of touch with the teams that are not in the American League or National League Central, because that's all I see.
Unless you want to watch A-Rad, which is tough.
And yeah, I don't have any interest in watching the national game broadcasts of teams that I'm not rooting for. So, when you ask me about teams on the East Coast or West Coast, normally I'd have at least somewhat of an educated answer on it, but I don't have much of an answer.
Yeah, it's really pretty strange, and
Do you guys think 60 games is enough to figure out who's good and not?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't either. I just
no. I think every year you'll have a team that the first 60 games of the season really surprises you.
Yeah,
and gets off to a good start, and you're like, wow, I didn't see that coming. And then all of a sudden, by the All-Star break, they're like out of it.
Yeah,
it's like, and then they settle back to kind of what you thought they were going to be. Well, now that team's going to firmly be in the playoffs, which is interesting.
Well, plus an injury now, if you're out for 3 weeks, you know, it really costs you during a regular season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does. It happens to everybody.
They've really made up for it, though, in the fact that there are 16 teams are going to make the playoffs this year. And it wouldn't surprise me if they go to that permanently because, you know, it creates more interest in more cities and more money, and I get it. But it really devalues how hard it used to be to make the playoffs.
If they were to do something like that, I think they should reduce, they should go back to 144, and that's a long time ago, but back to 144 regular season games.
What century was that? It was 152.
Oh, good Lord. It was 152,
you're
sorry.
You were both wrong. It was 154.
154. Whatever.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think they ought to shave a few regular season games. The union will probably say if you're going to make more of us play in the playoffs, we get fewer regular season games. So,
well, but it comes down to,
I think it would make sense to do it that way.
Well, you run into the, I mean, Maddie and I will argue about this, you know, we'd argue about this all the way to death, I suppose, but when you get to the point where, like, everybody makes it, like the NCAA, mm-hmm. I think there's a chance that the person who wins that shouldn't even be the national champion.
Oh, I think it'll be really funny if, you know, and they won't get 60 games in, but if a, 25-26 Cardinals team ends up winning the World Series.
Which is very possible. Yeah. I mean, the Cardinals won the World Series in 06, and they were like the 10th best team in baseball.
Yeah, they were the wild card
83
team.
And 70, something really bad. Like, they were right around 500, but right. But they, you know, snuck in the wild card, got hot, and ended up winning the whole thing. By the way, do you guys know what year the Major League regular season went from 154 to 162?
It was... I'm going to say right before Roger Maris, somewhere in the 50s.
I was going to say early 60s.
So it was early 60s, and it was the year of Roger Maris, 1961.
Okay. I knew it was right close to there because it was all everybody was talking about.
We're both right. Give us a trophy.
Yeah, so you both get participation trophies.
I think we just made the Major League Baseball playoffs.
Well, the biggest jump in the season in terms of percentage is not baseball. It was hockey. They went from 50 to 70, which is a huge deal, and all the records are still the same. So,
yeah, and when those guys now they play 82.
Yeah, when a guy scored 50 goals in a 50 game season, that was a big deal. Yeah. I mean, you know,
anybody physically deserves to reduce the schedule, it's NHL players. I used to be in business with somebody that had three of the St. Louis Blues kind of on their cul-de-sac up in St. Louis. And he said they looked like they had, when the season was over, they'd just sit around for a week or so and hang out. And he said they always looked like they were recovering from heart surgery.
Oh, my God.
That it's just such a physically brutal game. Well, and it really is.
Well, baseball can do it because 80% of the game, arguably, at any given night's the pitcher, and he goes every 5 days.
Yeah.
Right? So, you can play right field and not get a ball 3 days in a row. I mean, you know, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's a... It's not always that.
It's a different wear and tear, but it's still wear and tear.
Sure it is.
I mean, just playing a softball doubleheader the next day, you're sore. I mean, you feel it. I mean, doing that every single day in a much grueling way and then getting hit by pitches. You get hit by a 95-mile-per-hour fastball and you go to first. The next day, there's going to be a big-ass bruise on you.
Oh,
it's
going
to hurt. And you got to go out there and play again. And, you know, those are the minor things. Those aren't even the serious injuries.
Yeah, what I'm saying is hockey. It's you're all in,
no doubt. I mean, they do it in like 1 minute sprints, and they go as hard as they can for a minute or 90 seconds or however long it is, and then you rest quickly and you do it again, and you do that 12-15 times.
But,
a game?
You get whacked into the boards 3-4 times a night, and you play 5 games that week. I don't care who you are. I mean, you're going to look like somebody worked you over with a broomstick at the end of the week. I mean, right? But all of it has. Baseball used to be it was the travel, it was the heat, it was all the other stuff. Now some of that has been mitigated. I mean, the Cubs used to take Jack Brickhouse used to announce the plane there behind coming home so the wives could pick him up. They'd be on like a regular United flight where if the thing was late, they'd be late. You know, they'd be spending the night in it was the travel was horrible. Now most of these guys, I mean, it's a.
Now all the teams have private planes.
Are they are they driving some of these things?
The Cardinals did the one.
Yeah, I remember that.
Cubs and Brewers have always driven.
That's what I figure. That's
Milwaukee,
kinda
silly. Chicago, and then obviously Cubs, White Sox have always driven. Other than that, they're flying everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't even like Cincinnati or Cleveland. I think
I bet some of those East Coast
you would
cities,
think
they probably drive, don't they? I mean, if you're not gonna if you're doing DC, Philly, New York, Boston. I mean, maybe you're flying to all those places, Philly, or maybe, I don't know.
I would think New York to Philadelphia would be just as quick to get on a really nice couple of buses.
That's
and
what
drive
I would think.
Down.
Yeah.
I could take you two dudes and me back in time, I mean, there's a lot of things I'd like to see back in time, but one thing would be on my absolute historical bucket list is to have a night where the Yankees or somebody are leaving or playing their last game at Comiskey at 1 o'clock, and for us to hop on either whichever would be the 20th Century Limited or the Broadway Limited that night, and get a spot on that train and go hang in the club car. I bet we would have one of the most amazing evenings that we for any century.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That'd be awesome.
You know, all the newspaper guys, all the players, all the plus if the Cubs are going to play, you know, the Giants, they're probably on the same train or on the other train.
Yeah.
And can you imagine between the gamblers, the newspaper people, the players, all on the same train, everybody's all in the club car booze, and can you imagine the time we'd have?
They may even sneak some chicks on there.
You think?
You think?
Well, I'll tell you, one of them, I know we got to talk about economics here in a second, but one of the most amazing evenings I ever spent was probably 2 hours. JD, my grumpy employee, he really handles everybody's accounts because he's so good at it. Mm-hmm. We're coming out of Wrigley one day, and it was an opening day way back, and they had behind the left field wall there was this bar. I mean, it once in a while it appeared, and they get rid of it for a couple of years, and it come back. But there was a spot bar, I don't know what they used to call it, the Vine Line or something. And all of a sudden, I go, come on, look at the line for the L. Let's grab a beer. So he goes, no tables. So I could just follow me, will you? The world's grumpiest guy. So we get in there, and he's right, there's no tables. And there's this one table with two guys sitting there, and one guy says, come on, he waves us over there. You'd imagine that today, COVID. Sit down, and guess who the two guys are? Leo DeRocher and Paul Popovich. I sat there, I listened to Leo, me shut up. I don't think I said a word for 2 hours. Leo, you think I talk, that guy. He didn't name him the lip for nothing. He went from story to story, and Popovich, I don't think I've ever met a nicer guy. What a perfect gentleman. And I could still be there. I mean, they closed the place and they booted us out. And it was so much fun. I mean, Leo must have had, talk about wear and tear, Matty. The dude had like no hair. You could tell he must have had 50 basal cells taken off his dome, right? I mean, it was nothing but little spot when you take a basal cell off someone, you could tell. I mean, he must have been, I mean, the amount of skin cancer the dude had all those years out in the sun before everybody knew what it was. But he was talking about this guy and that guy. And he was right about one thing. He said, well, Paul Popovich, he said, other than Mazeroski, had the quickest double play turn anybody had ever seen in baseball. The guys that we see somebody even in softball, Matty, where they never bring it into their body. They just reach out and grab it before, and it's just out of their hand in a flash. That's a skill set that not very many people have. But he was talking about all the guys, but Ruth and all these other dudes. And we're talking about an encyclopedia. How many generations of baseball that he was a rookie on Ruth's team, right? DeRocher, yeah. I think. I mean, anyway, that had to be a lot of fun. But you imagine playing all day, all of a sudden in a club car all night, trying to sleep on a train when you're half sloshed. I mean, how ready are you to play the next day, for God's sake?
You're not.
You're probably not.
he made his major league debut in 1925 with the Yankees, but he just had, that was just two games. And then he didn't get back to the big leagues till 1928.
Wow.
And then he was there for good. And he 2 years with the Yankees. 3 years with the Reds, it looks like, and then a long time with the Cardinals, and then he was in Brooklyn for the rest of his career. Played till 1945, 17 years.
He was he part of the Gas House Gang and Cardinals?
So he was with the Cardinals from 33 until 37, so 5 years. I don't know. Was that that time period?
Well, no, that was before. I think it was Musial and those guys. It must have been later.
Yeah, I think that was after the war, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
An interesting thing, Billy Acemos, good friend of ours, he's a manager over at the Series Tap, he was a swimmer at Purdue. Anyways, Dad, when we used to go to Orlando's way back in the day, Abe Gibron and Muggs Hallis and all those guys used to hang out over there, nice group of people, way back. God, Muggs has been dead for what, 25 years maybe, 30 maybe? And so his mom just died, so they're going through all the stuff in the house. And his dad was a great football player. And he found all the letters where he was the scholarship offers from Miami, I think from Notre Dame, and where the hell else is he? Somebody, you know, every big school, Michigan or something. He ended up going to Purdue. And I said, well, was he any good? He goes, he was real good, but he was 18 when he showed up at Purdue, and that was the year the war ended, 1945. And all these guys came back from the war, and the entire the average age was like 24. And the team, he goes, he couldn't play. He played a little bit as a senior. He said, but these other dudes, they were men. It was like pro teams.
There were, I came across this recently, but apparently a lot of colleges in that 45 to 50 era were fielding a couple of teams. They were actually fielding a JV team. And, somebody got into a heated discussion on one of the social media platforms, imagine that, about had University of Tennessee and Notre Dame ever played in Memphis. And it turns out that yes, they did, but it was their JV teams. because there was a glut of people that, that were getting back to college and playing, college sports, you had an actual true JV at some schools.
Well, I think the Irish one, you had two Heisman Trophy winners in the same team. but Frank Leahy, he was a captain in, Army or Navy.
Not to be mistaken with Frank Fahey.
Right. Frank Leahy was, he's, a Hall of Fame coach, I would imagine. But he said all he did was recruit for after the war. They had these guys, I don't think there's any doubt that the Notre Dame teams of the late 40s would have probably beaten any NFL team. And I'm sure the Michigan teams and the Southern Cal and maybe the Tennessee teams would have been the same way. I mean, the average age had to be what? 23, 24, 25? And that's all they did. I mean, what was pro ball paying? Nothing.
And yes.
So guys went on the GI Bill and they played football.
Switching sports, but sticking with the age, there's a guy named Tyler Harris who started at Memphis. He went to Providence and now he's switching over to Iowa State, which drives me absolutely bonkers that college players do that. But he got a waiver to play. He's got one more year. He got a waiver to play for Iowa State. Want to guess his age?
28?
26.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did you guess 28?
Because he knew it was going to be extreme to the upside.
26 is extreme.
Yeah.
No, I mean, a lot of these guys had. When did Roger Staubach start? Was he 27, 26?
After Navy. Well, he played at Navy. This guy's going. That's college.
Yeah, these guys aren't coming back from a war, Chief.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but a lot of guys.
Taking a year or two off and maybe finishing high school when you're 19 or 20.
If you have eligibility left, could you legitimately play, like, if you're, like, 35?
I could go play. It's funny, when I started my PhD at Oklahoma State, one of my kids asked me what sport I was going to play while I was in school.
The answer is no, Mitty.
There's a cutoff somewhere, or what?
There is. Matter of fact, this would be a good trivia question if you didn't just croak Regis. I think it was, used to be like 32 or something. But you know they thought were abusing it were a lot of the Mormon guys that were going for their...
Oh, yeah, they come back and
their
play
mission or whatever.
Yeah. Play at BYU and you're...
Yeah, there was a lot of guys at Utah and BYU specifically that would be 24, 25, 26 because they had their two-year mission. And that was an advantage. I remember Rick Majerus when he took them to the championship game in Utah, and they were really good. They had a bunch of guys that were 23, 24 years old playing against Kentucky, who was like 19, 20.
I'm going to guess, maybe the cutoff is now 28. It used to be like 35.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can find that.
I bet you can, because, I mean, there were guys that went and played, went to like a junior college and still like to play basketball and are playing when they're 31, 32. Why wouldn't you? I mean, you can play.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the difference? So Russell, what are we looking? First of all, we don't want to see any kind of a collapse. I don't, because people lose too much money. And do you think there's a chance that our geniuses will before or if it happens, will change the $3,000 rule for how much you can deduct at your taxes? I mean, are we going to have the Dow 50,000 and it'll still be the same number as it was in 1980?
Oh, you mean so that. People can maybe use some of the previous losses.
No, well,
some
right now, if you bought Tesla here, 1,000 shares, and it went down $30, okay, and then you sold it, you lose $30,000. You can only deduct $3,000 towards your regular income,
right,
every year. So you better live 10 years, right? That number is the same as when it was in 1980,
right?
Which is, how ignorant is that?
It's a silly number.
Because
I've never fully understood the idea behind it. I kind of understand the idea behind it, but It's just to avoid, you know, it's to avoid the millionaires and billionaires from dodging taxes.
But it also means if you and I and Manny decide to invest in a hot dog stand,
mm-hmm.
and it blows up, that you and I will probably never be able to invest in anything the rest of our lives.
Right.
Which is insane. But that's the reason to me, and I don't have any proof of this, but you maybe can tell me, because you, I'm going to say during the 1990s when we had the big surpluses, where we had allegedly surpluses,
mm-hmm.
as Carl claims we never really did, a lot of that surplus was that Dot Bomb Inc. went from 2 to 200, and the guy who sold it at 200 had to pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
And the guy who bought it at 200 and went back down to 2 didn't get to deduct them.
That I think that helped tremendously yeah. back at that time period.
And I think our legislators, as dumb as they may may seem in some ways, are pretty clever about stuff like that. If they can find a way...
It's just like the hidden tax on your cell phone bill. Or I shouldn't say hidden, but
hidden?
One that's not right in front of you.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's one that kind of gets slipped in there, but definitely doesn't affect the majority of people. So they're able to maintain that one. And if they, you know, if they break it, if they increase the number a little bit, that's going to have an implication on tax revenues. And it's also going to, this is just how it appears politically, not in reality, but that ends up being a tax break for the really rich people who should be paying more in taxes.
Well, I mean, it's the some of the stuff that you see, I know you're one of these 1% sort of dudes, so I don't really think that you should be paying anymore. Honestly,
you know?
I mean, I think there's a number at which it becomes stealing. And if we're talking, you know, 31%...
It becomes punitive for doing well.
I mean, if you're talking 32%, what's the mm-hmm. max to the Fed, 32? If you're talking 32% to the Fed, and what
mm-hmm.
what's Illinois? Three or five, or what the hell's
Illinois?
It's five.
It doubled from 2.5
to 5.
Right, so you're
up to 36.
Yep.
Now you're paying
through
the nose for property taxes.
Yeah,
you're paying
$25,000 property tax bill.
And you're paying your payroll taxes.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, if you buy a car, you're paying through the nose for that. Every time you park, I mean, come on. We're up to 50 or 60. There used to be the chart that the average person had to work to what? Originally it was May 1st. Then it was May
10th. They kept moving the break even date back farther and farther.
At some point, when you get to 45 or 50% total,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Daddy Warbucks. That's too much.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, but the thing that gets me is what I do. I'm a horse on. Is if you put me in the Oval Office for a second, anybody who didn't pay their share, I'd have them in the stocks. I mean, this idea that the corporations were in Europe all these years not paying. Hey, screw them. Because in my lifetime, and this is very simple. What's the chief's edict? Talking about myself in a third person like I'm an NFL running back. The edict is every single time some bleep doesn't pay his share, guys like you and I and Maddie and the listeners got to pay more. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
There's no theory involved. There's nothing. I'm just saying that if ever anybody gets to cheat, it means somebody else has to pay more.
Or we have to print more to make up for the cheating, which ends up hitting us in the long run
even worse.
Yeah.
But I'm saying you can't do that, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by the way, you guys, are you guys planning on playing the basketball season? Where's the basketball season, Maddie? NCAA?
They haven't made a decision yet.
They haven't, but everything I'm reading says they are going to have their own version of the bubble, or maybe multiple bubbles. And they're going to play. That's everything I'm reading. Like, they have a plan,
bubble
unlike
where?
College football. That hasn't been announced yet, but they even just trademarked "Battle in the Bubble," and that was public FOIA that came out.
Then
the NCAA trademarked "Battle in the Bubble."
How do you go to class if you're in the bubble?
I don't know
these
the details
are students.
Yet.
How do they go to class now?
These are good questions. All good questions. I don't know the answers.
Yeah,
yet.
I think
we'll know soon, though.
They don't. And I'm not talking about Loyola, but they don't go to class. Didn't the Heisman Trophy winner and I know I'm switching to football, but the LSU Heisman Trophy winner, didn't somebody ask him about being a student on campus, and he said that he took all of his classes online so he didn't really have to worry about students bothering him?
Well, yeah.
I think a lot of,
when are we gonna say everybody man for himself on this COVID?
November 4th.
You think so? you're not the first person that said that.
I know.
SP Futures up 19. NASDAQ Futures up 122. Russell, thank you, and thank you for the coffee. Matty, nice job with all the sports stuff. As usual, you're the best. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.